Warning, this podcast may contain graphic violence, sexual themes, and bad language. If our language offends you, we apologize, but we do not give a fuck. Be mindful of your kids listening.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast. What's up, evil ones? Thanks for listening to the Evil Never Dies podcast. I'm your host, Brett, here with Carl, the contributor.
That's me, contributor.
What's up, Carl?
All is good.
This is our 100th episode.
100? Wow. I didn't think we'd make it past five. Especially after that second episode we did on Dio. That was pretty bad.
Yeah. It was sort of rough at the start, but
learning curve.
Yep, learning curve. And with that being said, we have a very special guest with us tonight.
Yes, we do.
He is actually a podcaster himself. And get this, he has over 19 million downloads.
Wow.
On his show. And he's also been a stand-up comedian. Now add author to his resume, and welcome to the show, Mr. Jerry Pauly. What's up, Jerry?
What's up, guys? I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on, man.
We appreciate you being here. Definitely.
You've done a lot for us. Basically, you're the reason why I even started doing this. So, and you've helped us out tremendously along the way with editing.
Don't put that on me.
Huh?
So don't put that on me.
It is. It's your fault, man. So what's been going on?
Nothing. Just getting through with, you know how it is, the spooky season.
Yeah.
It's, October 31st ends, and I hate to see it go, but at the same time, I'm kind of happy to see it go because we were jam-packed almost, it seemed like, every night through the month of October.
Yeah. I agree. When October 31st is like New Year's Eve to me, you know, just sort of glad to see it go.
It's bittersweet.
It is, yeah.
But
well, you guys do the haunt thing, so I mean, it's you started putting a lot of work into that way back in the summer, and maybe even the spring, really.
It was, it was more like March, I think.
Yeah, when y'all first started putting stuff together, and then, but I mean, I didn't realize, to be honest with you, that it was something that you guys did to raise some canned goods and stuff for charity. I mean, that's pretty damn cool.
Well, we appreciate it. Yeah. I seen your little yard thing you had set up too.
You look wicked.
Yeah. That's an awesome costume, man.
I got that. The story behind that little outfit is I got it to wear one time because I actually married a couple last Halloween in a graveyard in Bardstown, Kentucky. It's at the old Jailer's Inn. So it's the old jail that was from back in the 1800s. It's where the, I think the last hanging in Kentucky actually took place there. And there's a cemetery behind it, and they wanted to get married there. So I actually wore that to marry them.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
So you're actually ordained then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done a bunch of weddings. It's all been friends and family and stuff, but I've probably done 8 or 10, I'd say.
Awesome.
Yeah, friend, the Reverend Verde's ordained, you know, Greg Green.
Yep.
And he's done a couple of weddings too over the years.
Yeah, well, typically the ones I do have a comedic feel to it. That's how it actually got started. A good friend of mine who used to be the MC at a lot of my comedy shows, he and his wife met at our show. And so they decided when it was time to get married, they asked me, they said, "Hey, would you be interested in doing this?" And I'm like, "I'm not ordained or any of that." And they said, "Well, we know that, we'll take care of it." And they actually paid and actually did all the paperwork. All I had to do was give them a little bit of information. And so they basically went through with all of it just so I would marry them. And they kind of told me they wanted it to be funny. That's why they wanted me to do it. They didn't want people sitting out there thinking another boring wedding. They wanted people to enjoy it. And that's what I did. And I've used basically almost that same script to marry almost everybody I've done, including my son, which is pretty cool to be able to marry your son and daughter-in-law. And
awesome.
I've married my sister-in-law, my wife's sister, when her and her husband got married. I got to do that. And a couple of cousins and some good friends of mine. So, yeah, it's been – I actually had two really good sets of friends of mine that I got to marry both of them. So, yeah, it was really cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, when we were talking before we started recording, you said you're setting up some live shows.
Oh, yeah. We always – I don't start live events until April after the Final Four in college basketball, because, you know, around here, our teams are usually got a shot to get there. And so you don't want to schedule anything during the NCAA tournament, because you're just shooting yourself in the foot thinking yeah. somebody's going to come one of your events on Saturday if you're in Kentucky or anywhere else. So I always do try to do something. And it's really hard. This is the event I set up tonight, which is usually our first event of the year in April. It's right before the Kentucky Derby. I always do the first event in Louisville. And you got to be careful during that time, because the Kentucky Derby is the first Saturday in May. And 2 weeks before that is nothing but Kentucky Derby festival events. And last year we screwed up and set it up on the day that they do Thunder over Louisville, which is actually the biggest firework display in the world.
Really?
And it kicks off. Yeah, it kicks off the Kentucky Derby Festival. And last year, especially with the weather being good, they had almost 1 million people show up in downtown Louisville in southern Indiana across the bridge to watch this fireworks display. We still ended up with about 70 people at our show, but had it not been a really good day, had it been a rainy day or something like that, or had it not been thunder, we probably would have had twice that many, because we usually get about twice that many for that show.
Awesome.
So I had to make sure of my dates when I set that show up, and yep. I put it right in between. Now I got it on the Saturday in between Thunder and in between the Derby. So nothing big's going on that night.
Awesome. Where else you got shows set up for?
I haven't put it up yet, but we're doing, that's what that show was with Brohio Podcast, by the way, in Louisville.
Okay.
And then, and it's in a haunted bar, by the way. It's a place that's opened up. Originally, the building was from the 1800s, late 1800s. And it's a really cool, kind of a modernized bar now. But they've got their own little ghost that the guy that runs the place was telling me about. So that's why we set it up there. Then we've got, we're going to do New Orleans with Brohio and Justin Rimmel from Mysterious Circumstances in October. That one hasn't been confirmed yet. I'm still looking for a venue. We're going to do September with Tony Merkel from the Confessionals podcast in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. So that'll be cool. That one I haven't actually put on the website yet. I literally just got confirmation before we came on with you guys. So I'll get that up there tomorrow. And what other one did I set up already? Buffalo, New York in July. That's actually going to be with Brohio and Mysterious Circumstances as well. So we got three set up so far. We've got, our 7th anniversary, which will be in Detroit, also with Brohio and Mysterious Circumstances. So we got four set up so far.
We might have to take a road trip, Carl, down to New Orleans.
You just might have to.
I've never been there before, so that would be cool, man.
And it's going to be in October. So
yeah. Yeah.
What better time to be there?
Well, spooky season in New Orleans.
As long as it ain't Halloween weekend. We're good. So,
well, I definitely wouldn't do that. I'm trying to get it set up. It'll probably be the early part of October, because we'll have Scarefest near the 16th, 18th, something like that here in Lexington. So I'll try to get it to the first week or second week of October. But we're also going to try to tie that in with a couple of tours down there. Like Bloody Mary has been on the show. She's got a haunted museum, which is awesome. That's the Zach and Addie place where that murder took place, where he kind of cut her up and did some Jeffrey Dahmer stuff. And I'm going to tie something in with us going there, and it may be one of her tours. So we're going to make a weekend of it.
Yeah, that was a good episode you did on that.
That's one of my favorites, actually. It's because it's got true crime. It's got creepiness. It's got voodoo. It's got, you know, the a haunting. It's got suicide. I mean, it's got everything you could possibly want in a story. And we had Bloody Mary on that episode, so she actually came on and talked about it. So what better than to tell the story of a place and then have the person who owns it come on to talk about it?
Yeah, she's been up at Texas Frightmare Weekend a couple times. I met her once up there, so she's a trip for sure.
she definitely is. She's a unique person, to say the least.
Yes, she is. So, what else you got going on?
That's it for right now. As far as, I mean, we've got, you know, a couple little things that pop up. We got CryptidCon, which is a cryptid convention here in Lexington. That'll be going on the week before Thanksgiving, that Saturday and Sunday before Thanksgiving. And then we're going to be there's a bookstore that opened up in Louisville that's nothing but horror. It's a horror books, horror really? Fantasy, horror movies. It's kind of cool. They got spider webs and stuff painted on the outside of the building, but it literally just opened up a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to do a book signing and a live podcast remote there in December. So, awesome. But other than that, we take it easy usually December through April when we start the live shows. These live shows wear us out, buddy. Just going and just on top of doing our regular stuff, you know, we throw 5, 6, 7 live shows in, and most of them are traveling, as you've seen. And we got to drive everywhere because we have to bring the equipment.
Yeah.
So, you know, we go to Detroit. That's a 8-hour trip for us. And we go to Buffalo. That's a 9-hour trip. New Orleans is 13 or 14 hours. I'm trying to set up an event with Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online for May at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. That's another 10-hour trip. So, yeah, it's a lot of driving, and by the time you do one of those a month and you try to cram all your, you know, we got a pretty hectic recording schedule. We have 6 episodes a week to come out.
Yeah.
And by the time you write and produce and record and edit all that on top of the shit we do on Facebook and stuff, I mean, it's when you're going to miss a week because you got to be gone for 4 or 5 days, and you got to do all that stuff in advance on top of your regular. So by the time those 5 or 6 months are up of doing live shows, we're wore out.
Yeah, I don't see how you do it, brother. I have a hard time with 2 episodes a week, so, and one of them is short.
but in fairness, I mean, this is our full-time job. So,
yep.
You know, I just to give you an example, I get up on Monday morning and I start at about 8 a.m. and I don't finish Monday night until usually about 10 p.m. So I put in about 14 hours on Monday, and then Tuesday I try to, you know, that's the easy episodes that we do. And then I'll start Tuesday researching for Sunday's episode. And Saturday now we have an episode that takes a little bit of research as well. So
a long
the
episode.
Other stuff's kind of easy, but you know, so as easy as it can be. But the Sunday night episode and the Saturday episode, that takes about 30 hours of research between the two of them. So that's how most of the rest of my week is consumed.
Wow. That's crazy. But like you said, it's your full-time job. So as long as you're not getting sick of it.
Yeah, that's true. Huh?
I say you're always going to be sick of something when you got deadlines.
Yeah.
I've always said it doesn't matter what you do. I'm sure Vanna White gets tired of just having to come into work and touch a bunch of letters, and that's all she's got to do. But anytime you have to do something or have to be somewhere, it can be frustrating at times. But I also, like I was telling Tracy the other night, she said, you need to quit working so hard, because it was like 11 o'clock and I was still going. And she's like, you need to quit working so hard. I was like, this ain't work. I mean, it's hours, but I mean, there's people out there that are working construction. There's people that are digging ditches. There's people that work a hell of a lot harder than I do. I mean, trust me, I've put in 70-hour weeks at a really, really stressful job. I know what hard work looks like, and this ain't
exactly
it.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. I know the haunt business, it's more than a hobby. It's full-time work, whether it's the pro haunt Moxley Manor that we've worked at or doing the yard haunt. It's fun, but it gets as stressful as a regular job too.
Sure.
And that's just doing something part-time.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we got a couple of friends that are in the haunt business, and one of them actually runs a pretty big one over in Southern Indiana. He took us through and let us see all the behind the scenes. Look, we got to go through the place with the lights on so we could see where everything was set up and all the little triggers and all that. And I mean, it's actually, I thought it was more impressive with the lights on than the lights off, because there are so many details that you miss.
I agree.
Exactly.
I think so too. You know, we get all this stuff designed and detailed, and then we turn the lights off. Me and Brett were kind of having a discussion in our little yard, hon. I'm like, Brett, this is too dark. We need to light it up so people can see all the cool stuff we got in here. So that's a good point.
Yeah, and you know, they get the strobe lights and stuff going. And yeah, I was like, there was a couple of rooms. It's like, you didn't notice anything in the room other than the strobe lights. And I was like, man, this stuff was really detailed when we had the lights on. And it is kind of a shame that but if you went through with it, you know, without the strobe lights and stuff, that wouldn't have the same effect either. So it's kind of a catch 22.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there has to be I like a couple rooms that are well lit, but then some rooms need to be a little darker. So I try to make a good blend of both worlds. And that's hard in the haunt business, because a lot of these haunts want it totally dark. Some of them, you know, put a little bit more lighting into it. So that's a good point.
I think if you're in one of those, you know, every haunt seems to have that little stretch where it's just all dark and you just got to feel your way around the walls and find the openings. You know, I think those would be a good place to have the strobe lights and stuff like that going through there, because you're not really affecting anything else. I mean, and it's, you still get that strobe light effect, and that's still part of the experience. But at the same time, it doesn't take away from a room that you put a lot of effort into the detail.
That's a good point.
Yep. Yeah, I actually went through Moxley Manor for the first time Halloween night. First time I ever been through it, and I worked there 8 years.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's different if you're on the inside as opposed to being just somebody going through.
Yep. Yep. Because I never had a chance before. I was always working or fixing something, or, you know, just waiting for everybody to go through and for them to tell me I can go.
And we never did.
Nope. I'd be still sitting back there. Everybody else is done.
I was asking a couple people a few years ago, when the podcast first started taking off, I was like, you know, that would be a good evolution for us, is to come up with our own haunt. And, you know, I talked to a buddy of mine that used to do something similar to what you guys did with a yard deal, but he'd been collecting stuff for a long time, and, you know, him and his brother did it. And so they put on a big deal. And when I found out just what they paid for their little setup and all the stuff that they collected over the years, and how much this is and how much that is, I was like, I had no idea that a big time haunt, like probably like Moxley Manor or something. I mean, I'd hate to think how many hundreds of thousands of dollars are in, I think, just in props.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. For sure.
And then wood is skyrocketed. So now the supplies, you used to could buy, you know, OSB for like $5 a sheet, $3 a sheet. Now it's like $30 or $50. It's insane. Yeah. So it is a very expensive business to be in. That's why the tickets are all going up. People, you know, it's like everything else. They're having to raise the prices of the haunts just to pay for them.
Yep. Yeah, I couldn't pay $50 to get in a haunt. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, some of the local ones around here.
I couldn't force myself to.
Cutting Edge was charging $60. Of course, this is their 31st year, so they've been around for a while. Whereas Moxley was charging, I think, $35 for general admission. So yeah,
$35, yep. And then $50 for the fast pass.
$50 for the fast pass.
That's really reasonable, and
it's very reasonable.
Way cheaper than a lot of the other haunts in the area are charging. But
the one that we did an event at and got a little behind the scenes look was called Malice Manor. It's in Clarksville, Indiana. And I really like their setup better than some of the ones I've been to. I like the outdoor ones and all that stuff. This one was completely inside. The entire waiting line was inside. They had it set up, and it was just a really cool facet the way they had it set up. And then you went through, and they literally, it was inside of a big warehouse, and but they had built literally like a house inside of the warehouse with all the walls and the rooms, and I just remember walking through it with all the lights on and just being completely flabbergasted at how much work went in, not even counting the hunt, just the structure itself.
Yeah.
You know, just the rooms that were built out and the ceilings in some and not any. I was like, man, this is something that you better damn well make your money on it during the haunt season, because you're going to have to pay for that all year long for the other 9 months, 10 months you're not using it, because you can't just tear all that stuff down and put it all back together.
No.
Most of these haunts now, they have a building they keep year round. When I started back in the 80s doing these things, they would just lease out a building probably in September, put it together, tear it down and be gone. But now you got to keep the building year round. So you're paying rent, you're paying electricity. So it's an expensive business, but it's fun. It's in my blood. I'll never give it up completely.
Same here.
I know I was talking to him. He said, and they've only been doing this one a couple of years, but they were part of a bigger one from years before. And he was telling me the previous weekend, they made about $25,000 a night, which that was taken, not what they made, but that was what they brought in off ticket sales. And I mean, you do the math on it and it all seems like a lot of money, but when you figure what you got to pay the actors and what you got to pay year round and what went into the props and what went into the build out and all that stuff, I mean, I'm sure they don't make as much money as it seems like, but I'm sure they do pretty well.
Usually, how long do you say they've been? This is their second year, you said?
I think this was their second year. It might have been their third year, but it's only they were listed in one of the magazines listed them 13th best in the United States, though. So they're getting a reputation anyway.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, it takes about 3 years to really start breaking even and making your money too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's a long-term investment. You can't go in it year one and think you're going to make money. You're going to lose money in the beginning. So,
yeah, most it takes five really to get fully going, you know, before they actually start making a profit. Because, every year you're going to that trade show up there in St. Louis and ordering $20,000 worth of props, you know, there's part of your money right there. And then, like we said, rent, electricity, all that, and paying people to build and all that. So, yeah. All right.
That's why I decided it wouldn't for me.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. You got to really. Yeah, it as much as you got going on, I don't know if you'd want to get into that part of it.
If I win Powerball Saturday night.
I just want somebody else to do it and put our name on it. That's what all I really want. I just want to sell the naming rights.
There you go. Yeah.
The hell out of it.
that would be cool too.
Definitely, yeah. It's a good idea.
Or at least like a sponsor type deal, you know, type deal too.
The other thing I really want to do is I want to open up a horror themed restaurant. And I've been saying that for literally 5 years. And Tracy keeps saying I'm full of shit, but you know, she also said that I wasn't going to write a book. And she also said that nobody would ever come see us at a live event. And she also said we'd never do a cruise. So we did all that stuff. So I guess the next thing is to open a restaurant, but I want to open something that, do you guys have tin roofs down there?
Tin roofs? No, I don't think so.
It's more of a bar restaurant / music venue. So it usually has a pretty good stage, but it's like a good place to go watch games and stuff if you want to do that. And I wanted to do something like that. We could call it Hillbilly Hangout, and actually have it horror themed, but have a place for live music and stuff like that. So, I think it would be kind of a cool thing to do that would be a little different than most do. There's some haunted bars and stuff, but I don't think, or, you know, horror type bars, but I don't think there's really anything more like a music venue that would tie in like that. And Hillbilly Hangout sounds like a good place. People would probably come to a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely not go York. To it. Yeah.
Well, you already got your own food line out already, so
that's true.
Might as well add to that.
I had to drive to Cincinnati 2 hours a day to pick that stuff up because we did a Scarefest a couple weeks ago and we ran out of almost everything that we had on the second day, midway through the second day, and we still had the rest of Saturday and all day Sunday to go. And we had no idea it was going to be that popular. But the week before, we had done a live event at Bobby Mackey's Music World. And I think we sold $1,400 worth of merchandise those two events. And we would have sold more had we had more. So I had to go pick up more because we got this other event getting ready to come up. And
that's awesome, man.
That is, yeah.
That's a good thing, though, selling out in 2 days out of three.
Yeah, and we know now because we started off with about, I think, 17 different products and the peach cobbler, so 18. But 17 initial products, a bunch of jams and jellies and barbecue sauces and salsas and stuff. And now we know what really sold good and what didn't sell as well. So now the trip up there, it was basically just buying all the bestseller stuff. So we scrapped a lot of it. So instead of, I think now we've got probably 8 products, but 4 of them were sauces.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try me some of that barbecue sauce for sure.
That's another one we ended up keeping. I had 3 barbecue sauces, 2 of them I decided to keep in the lineup. But the salsas, man, I can't tell you how many people buy them damn salsas. Because really? we've got a mild bacon flavor. Who else you know has a bacon flavored salsa?
Never heard of it, but I may have to order some of that.
And then we got a bacon habanero salsa if it's got a little more kick. We've got a mild chunky salsa for those plain Jane people. And then we've got ghost pepper salsa. And that was a big seller. I could get my hands on Carolina Reaper salsa, but I chose not to because I prefer to keep my rectum in place.
I hear you, man. I hear you. That's funny. Oh, so about the podcast, how did you get started doing Hillbilly Horror Stories? What gave you the idea?
Well, you have to go back to my comedy days first.
Okay.
And realize that anybody who has ever been an entertaining force, it doesn't matter what you do, music, comedy, ballet, you do it for one reason. You like the attention you get from an audience, period. Anybody tells you any different, they're lying to you. That's why you get on stage. Nobody picked up a guitar just because they wanted to write songs. They were trying to get girls or trying to get guys or whatever the case is. That's why you do it. And, you know, I got into comedy because I wanted to make people laugh, and I got addicted to the feedback you get from the crowd. But much like we were just talking about with the haunt industry, it's a lot of work. What people don't realize about stand-up comedy, if you're not Kevin Hart or, you know, Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle, you have to work your ass off to even get gigs. And when you start off doing comedy, you really got to pay your dues. Like, I was a filthy comedian. You can't start off like that because there's rules in the business. They're unwritten rules. But if you want to work, you got to follow those rules. For example, when you're an MC, that's how you start off. Then you build up to an opening act. Then you become a feature act. Then you become a headliner. And when you're a feature act, you can get away with some stuff, but mainly you got to wait till you're headlining. So you got to be pretty damn funny without doing all that shit to even get to be a headliner. Then you could do what you want to do. Why? Here's why. Because you have two types of headliners. You've got really clean headliners, like a Jeff Foxworthy type.
Okay.
Well, now this will almost sound like a contradiction, but somebody like a Jeff Foxworthy, they don't want somebody dirty before them because they probably have an audience that you know, I'm talking about if you're at the club, okay? Not big time like him, but let's just say you're a Jeff Foxworthy type comedian coming up and you haven't made it famous yet, but you're a headliner at the comedy clubs. You have an audience that comes to see you because they like your clean style, home style comedy. Now you bring a filthy comedian up before then, that could keep those people from coming back the next time you come to town.
Or even leaving in the middle of the show, you know, if it's too bad.
So therefore, clean comedians do not want a dirty comedian on their bill, period. Now, let's say you're a dirty comedian. They don't want somebody beforehand stealing their thunder. they want a clean comedian. So when they come on, they get all the awe and the shock and all that. But if they got that on the person opening up for them, they don't seem as funny, even if they are. So that's just the kind of the way it is. You know, you don't, and Jeff Foxworthy, you know, he could go later after he's established and do stuff with, you know, Ron White and stuff like that. And it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's the way it works. So what you have to do in comedy when you're starting out, you work your way up and you gotta, you don't just get people calling you saying, hey, we need an MC. You literally call comedy clubs and you drive your ass to that comedy club and you do some free shows. They call them showcases. So let's say that you've got your headlining one night and you've got an opener and an MC. They might give me 5 minutes as a special guest to come up there and show my stuff. And if people like it, and if the people at the club like it who run the stuff, they may give me a chance somewhere down the line to come and do something. But it's basically a free audition. You have to pay your own trip up. You got to pay for your own, you know, trip, your gas. You got to pay for your wherever you stay. You don't get any of that stuff paid for when you're coming up. And after years of doing that, you eventually build enough name where you know, can work places. But you got to constantly set that stuff up yourself. Nobody's calling you and saying, hey, what are you doing May 5th through the, you got to constantly say, hey, I'm looking to open. Do you have anything going? And then you call the next club. Then you call the next club. Then you call the next club. When you get to be a featured act, they will start paying for your trip up and they'll put you up in a, what they call the comedy condo, which would be something they usually just an apartment or something they keep year round just to put their comedians in. And a lot of times you're sharing it with the other people on the bill.
Yeah.
So, but that's how they do it. Anyway, long story short, after about 10 years of doing that consistently, I got tired of it. So I started just doing local stuff. I started going to bars and saying, hey, let me come into a comedy show. I'll sell my own tickets. You get free entertainment. And how about that? And people were doing that. I was the only person in town doing that.
Really?
And I built up a really nice reputation for about 5 years of just traveling around within an hour of where I lived and just doing shows on a regular basis. I wouldn't do it every single night or nothing like that, but you know, I had some times where I'd do a Saturday night here and a Friday night at some other place in town, and I'd make $1,100 over the weekend, you know,
just from selling tickets.
Yeah. Selling tickets.
Hmm.
But you know, I'd sell tickets for $15 a pop, and you know, and then I had a nice little ring going on. Like the comedians who wanted to be on the show with me, I would build up and give them tickets to sell. I didn't pay anybody. Here's 5 tickets. I'm charging people $15 a piece. You charge whatever the hell you want. You can give them away if you want to. I don't care. But you sell them for $15 a piece, you're going to get paid for doing a 15-minute set. And you're going to get paid pretty damn good because you're looking at $75. Nobody, you go to Comedy Caravan up here and you do an opening act like that, you're not getting paid nothing.
Yeah, they've like paid little, like $20, $25.
Half time they don't pay you anything. That's really? That's your home club wherever you're at is the worst place to make money because they know you live there and they will use you for free all the time with the hopes that you'll get bigger gigs in the future. It's just the way it works. But okay. Like that in every city. So I would do that, but you know, I'd have to go to the bar and I had to find somebody to let you do it. And I'd go sell all the tickets and go drop the tickets off to people. Cause you don't have will call at a bar, you know, yeah. You got to go drop all those tickets off to people so they could come. And then you got to make sure that the comedians that are on the bill actually show up. So you're keeping the communication. I just got tired of all that, man. I loved being on stage, hated all the other parts of it. So I'd get out of it. And then next thing you know, 2 months later, I got that itch and I'm right back into it. And so eventually I moved to Lexington from Louisville. That was the easiest way. That was the easiest way for me to get out of it because I'm away from where everybody knew me. That's where my crowd was. So I could still drive there. It's an hour and 15 minutes for Christ's sake, but this was my easiest way to get out of it. And I just decided I'm not going to do it anymore. And I started getting that itch. Well, about that time I got that itch, I started listening to podcasts. And that's when I found Paranormal Podcast. And I started listening to Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online and his wife, Jenny, at the time. And I thought, Hey, this is kind of cool. They're talking paranormal, but at the same time, they're adding some comedy to it. And I thought, I think this is something I could do. And then I started listening to Lore from Aaron Mankey. And I was like, I knew I couldn't do that. Aaron's got this voice and he's a writer and it's all scripted out. I'm like, I can't do that. You know, I at least I didn't think I could. I do some of that stuff now, but I didn't initially think I could do that. And I probably couldn't have back then. So I thought, well, what Tony and Jenny do, I could do. They're just talking about a story, conversating back and forth. But I had a friend of mine that I worked with, a guy named Ricky, and we used to talk about paranormal all the time. I grew up in a haunted house. He had some haunted stuff happen with him. So these would be some really good, I'll say, spirited conversations that we used to have. And so I thought, man, you know what? He'd be the perfect co-host. If people could hear the things that we've been talking about, I think they would enjoy it because he was funny and he just had a unique way of telling a story. And I just thought he was funny. He cracked me up all the time. I thought, man, this would be perfect. Comedy and paranormal. And it'd be like at a nightclub. It'd be like two dirty comedians at a nightclub. And that was my envision for Hillbilly Horror Stories. So he said he'd do it. Tracy wanted to do it. I said no, because she didn't have any kind of passion for the paranormal. She didn't like scary movies. So it didn't seem like that'd be a very good fit. That wasn't my vision. So I told Ricky, okay, let me get all the stuff together. I ordered two microphones, and it was immediately the wrong microphones. They didn't work right. I was using Audacity, and I didn't realize that you can't use two microphones on one computer with Audacity without having a mixer, which I didn't have. So we just used one mic between us for the first little bit. That really didn't work out. Our first episode sounded like shit. I mean, beyond shit. It was horrible. And Ricky and I did 8 episodes, and it was exactly like I kind of thought it would be, except Ricky had a little bit of stage fright when he got that microphone in front of his face. So eventually he'd get a little bit comfortable through in the middle of the episode, and he would break out and it'd be like, oh man, but it wouldn't stay like that all the time. And he's really hard on himself. He's one of these guys that I always kid him and say he's got a lot of quit in him, because he's ready to quit at a drop of a hat at anything that he does, because he just doesn't have a lot of self-confidence. And, so we do the 8 episodes, and Brett, you probably know how I am. I'm balls to the wall, 100% anything I do not half-ass anything. Yeah. So we literally did the first episode, and then I found out after the first episode that I had to have open heart surgery. And I was determined I was not missing an episode. We just started. So I told Ricky, I said, well, I got to have open heart surgery next week. So when you come over this weekend, we're going to record 2 episodes. That'd be the one for this weekend and then one for the next weekend. And then by the following weekend, that'd be 2 weeks. I should be fine to record. And that's what we did. And he came over a couple of times to sit and write with me and on some episodes after heart surgery. And he realized that I even with heart surgery, I was like, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this episode and do this. And he really thought it was going to be more like just show up and we'll talk some shit and that'll be it. And that was not my intentions. My intentions was I want to give the best performance we can. I want to get the most details we can. And we only intended on doing 20-minute episodes. We didn't think anybody would care about any more. It's, you know, everybody wants to get in and get out and shit. And so I thought 20 minutes would be all anybody wants. Perfect. Then people want it longer and they want it longer. But we get through the first 8 episodes. And we're going to Tracy's parents' house. And we were due to record that night about 4 hours later. And he calls me. He's sick. He's not going to be able to make it. I don't miss episodes, period. I'm just a big believer you don't miss episodes. And I said, you know, well, dude, we're supposed to record. I know, man, but this and that. So I hung up and I told Tracy, I said, well, I guess you get your shot tonight. I said, we're going to record. And she's like, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, you won't have to. I said, actually, we're doing Rock and Roll in the Occult. It was the first episode we did on that. I said, I actually did all the work. So I was just going to be reading and Ricky was just going to pretty much respond anyway on this one. So I said, I'll read it to you and I'll tell you the stories. You just respond. And she did. And it went over really well. It was by far not only the most listens that we had of the previous 8 episodes, but we actually had people responding. Hey, I really like this. I like that. I like this. We had 6-7 people respond. We're out of think we might've had 3 responses on the other 8 episodes combined.
Really?
And Ricky even said, dude, that's who should be your co-host. That was great. And I think that's who I'm like, no, she's a perfect fill in. It worked out great. You're the host. Let's get back to work. So we recorded the next 2 episodes. One of them was a Halloween episode. And we did episode 10 and 11. And then Ricky said, you know what, man, I don't think it's for me. I got a lot going on. I got 5 girls at home. I got my wife. None of them drive. I'm taking 2 or 3 of them back and forth to work. I think you're just better off if you get Tracy. And she stepped in on episode 12. And now we've got about 900 episodes. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, great story.
That's great.
But that's been the secret to our success. In all honesty, and I tell Tracy this all the time, if Ricky hadn't stepped down, and I talk to Ricky all the time still, if Ricky hadn't stepped down and Tracy came on, we would have never made it where we were. I don't think we would. I talked to Diane, a student from History Goes Bump, and somebody had turned her on to our show, and she listened to it, and she kind of gave a review on one of her episodes. And it was the first time that we ever got mentioned on somebody else's podcast. And I was all excited because I knew who they were. And she's like, oh, yeah, this hillbilly horror story. Anthony told us to give them a listen. I did. But it literally was just like 2 guys in a bar just talking about ghost stories. And I thought, well, that's kind of disappointing because
that's what you intended in the first place, sort of, you know.
Exactly. That's what I intended in the first place. But then it was my first reality that maybe that really wasn't what people wanted. And now I listen to Brohio and realize, yeah, people still want that. But what we were doing, wouldn't work into that effect. Now keep in mind, we're talking 8-9 episodes, and I'm very impatient, so I'm ready to scrap something after 8 episodes. But I don't think that what we ever would have done really would have caught on, just like mine and Amanda's show. I think it caught on, but never to the level that I hoped it would have. But the chemistry, I think, between Tracy and myself, obviously being married, the formula of her never knowing the episode and just responding and asking the same questions that the audience out there is asking themselves.
Exactly.
I think just really that's the secret to our success. And had she not joined in the podcast, we would never be where we're at today, being able to do this full time and actually make a comfortable living doing it.
And plus she's hilarious too.
She is. You know what's funny? I don't think the show is as funny as it was with Ricky and I. I completely toned myself down. Because we're a family-friendly show for the most part now.
Yep.
And that never, you're talking about, this is like a Van Halen change going from David Lee Roth to Sammy Hagar. It's 2 completely different things. But, I think I say a funny thing or two a show. I don't think it's laugh out loud funny. I think it's, it's maybe crack a smile funny. And she says a couple things every episode. I think it's about that same way. But for some reason, people, if you just looked at reviews, people think we're the funniest show on earth. And I don't think we're that funny, but I guess, what do I know about comedy, apparently?
Oh, I think you're funny as hell. I love the Tracy-isms for sure.
Well, she got her own peach cobbler mix off of Tracy-isms, so.
Yep. So.
It's so funny. I actually did a public access show in the 90s with my friend Video Bob. So when Brett wanted to do a podcast, I'm like, I don't know how to do podcasts. I'm a video guy. So it was a challenge for me going from doing primarily video to doing an actual podcast. And it's been fun. It's been a learn.
I was set up to do a cable access show back in, when we talking, this is what, 2020, probably 2010, 11. I think it was 2012. I was set up to do a cable access show. Insight up in Louisville came to me and said, hey, we really want you to do something, because I had built a name for myself locally. And they're like, you know, I worked it out so I could do anything that I wanted. No holds barred. And I actually shot two or three videos for it. And then they just decided they didn't want to do it, and nothing ever aired. They were shutting down the studio and changing stuff around and moving stuff out. So it just ended up going nowhere. But I posted a couple of the videos on Facebook not too long ago. Every time it comes up, Brett, you probably saw it, the one with the duck in it with Tracy, and it's like Ben Affleck. I posted it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
That was actually the first video that we recorded to put on the episode, and it just never made it.
Oh wow, that's funny.
That is interesting.
But and what? I did another one that I haven't posted because the sound quality wasn't that good. But I actually had an old friend of mine, her and her boyfriend, and I did a bit to where I'm at their house, and I come and sit down between them, and but he wouldn't, in the skit, he wasn't her boyfriend. He was a real life boyfriend, but he was just a guy that came over, and it would be like every time she would talk to me, you know, something like all the small things from Blink 182 would come on, or Give a Little Bit would come on. But whenever she talked to him, it'd be like Big John would come on, and so it was all dick jokes. And you know, but it was just the way I had it set up. I thought it actually worked out pretty good, but the sound quality wasn't all that good. I had to go in afterwards and put in the music, you know, to match it up. So we had to, you know, try to act like music was playing and carry on with it. But you know, I had some good ideas for skits. But
so did you do the Warning podcast because you were sort of itching again to do the funny stuff? And
I think that was part of it. That was a big part of it. I wanted to do that. I talked to Bro Ohio about kind of being a guest on their show on occasion and doing, you know, possible little segment or something like that. But Amanda, I fell in love with her comedy, her style. I thought she was hilarious. Not everybody else did. You gotta kind of have a flavor for her, because some people would find her just completely disgusting, and I can't believe it, you know, but I thought she was hilarious. It was my style of comedy, and a lot of people felt the same way as I did. They loved her too, just like I know you did. But I thought it would be cool. When I got on the phone with her about something one day. I can't remember what it was. She sent me this text, and it was so weird that I'm like, I got to hear what this chick sounds like. So I called her, and then the accent, she's got that thick ass, you know, Northeastern accent.
Yeah.
And then she's talking about the weirdest shit. And it was so funny. I was laughing so hard. And I'm like, you know what? I think you should come on our show. And I know that the language might not go over, because now we've established ourselves. I mean, we're probably 100 episodes in, 150 episodes in at that time. And I said, but I'll just give warning and I'll put it at the end. And that way, if people don't like it, they don't have to listen. Well, let me tell you about giving people warnings. It don't fucking help.
No, it doesn't. They don't listen.
So, you know, I had Amanda on, and I called it Amanda's Take. And I told people, hey, before you come on, we've already recorded this. It's got a lot of language in it. If that kind of stuff is not for you, do not listen. The rest of the show is over. You can turn off right now. Lo and behold, we had some people that just thought she was hilarious. And then we had some people that just didn't like it. And I'm like, I just told you not to listen. I couldn't have told you any more accurate of what you were going to hear, but people just got to have something to complain about.
They do.
And I had her on again, and more complaints. So I said, you know what? I remember when we got the complaints, Tracy's father had just passed away. We were on our way. We were in Atchison, Kansas, getting ready to do our Sally House event. and it was back in August of 2019. And we're sitting in a hotel room. We had just got there. The event was the next day. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. We'll just go. I talked to a man. I said, what do you think about doing our own podcast? We'll have some rules. You know, we'll get certain topics that we won't touch on. We won't talk about transgenderism, or we won't talk about, you know, we're going to make sure that we keep it funny. But at the same time, we won't cross a lot of real big boundaries. You know, I'm not trying to get, because I didn't want to have people start hating on Hillbilly Horror Stories. I wanted to leave religion and sexual stuff out of it completely. You know, let's leave that stuff alone. And so that's what we decided to do. And we set a date for it to come out, which I think was in October, and recorded 4 or 5 episodes, and then went ahead and released it. And I mean, I would say the show was a success. It's got over 100,000 episodes. I mean, 100,000 listens. And it really wasn't on that long. We did 61 episodes, and then we quit just because I just didn't have the time to do it anymore. It wasn't making money. This show was making money, and I found I had some stuff I could do that would make the show a lot more money, but I had to give something up. So I had to give that one up. And so we quit, and then hell, it went a year and people were still listening. We were still getting like 2,000 listens a week. I mean, a month. 2,000 listens a month, and we hadn't even done an episode in 6, 7, 8 months.
Wow.
And so I hit her up and I said, look, I've got my schedule kind of tight now. You know, I'm doing this full time now, which I wasn't doing at the time. And I said, I think we could make her go of it again if you want to. I said, we can change it up a little bit. There's some things I'd like to change on a little bit on the format and stuff. And I mean, people start listening again, and we were able to do another, I think, 25 episodes or something. And I signed a pretty lucrative deal with Red Circle for Hillbilly Horror Stories. And part of the contract was that I had to drop that show because they wanted to protect. They didn't want that show. They just wanted Hillbilly Horror Stories. And with Hillbilly Horror Stories being a clean show and that being an adult show, they wanted to make sure that cancel culture didn't come after. And after, because they gave us a guarantee on the money for a year guarantee. And they wanted to make sure that we didn't do anything to jeopardize us. And I even said, well, I mean, you can, if you want to put it in the contract that if something happens, but you know, it was in our best interest to not take any chances with the kind of money they were offering us. So I had to
money talks, bullshit walks.
Yeah, and yes, especially in 2022, you got to watch what you say. I mean, it can get ugly really quick.
And that's why I told Amanda when we started, you know, when we started that podcast, there were certain topics we had to stay away from. Those topics I would do all over the place 10 years ago.
Especially doing stand up for sure. Exactly. Yeah, I missed that show. I wrote in a few stories to it.
You did.
had some poop stories and some brother-in-law stories, and
you were probably the most loyal listener we had, in all honesty, because you wrote in more than anybody else.
I got a lot of fucked up shit in my past, dude.
Oh yeah, we got the good Brett now. I can truly say.
The good Brett, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I was an asshole a couple of years ago. But, yeah. Yeah, if Amanda was available, I'd do something with her, but she ain't never returned any of my messages, so I guess she's not interested, so.
Well, I think it was...
She's got a lot going on.
Yeah, she's got a lot going on, too, family-wise, work-wise. I still talk to her, and like I said, I know she would like to eventually do something, but it's just not in the cards for right now.
Cool. All right. So I know a lot of people that listen to our show listen to your show, but I want to hear a little bit about your growing up in the haunted house, if you don't mind.
We're going to be on this damn thing.
Yeah, I want to hear the story too, though, so we got to hear it. I love haunted house stories here.
All right. So I'll tell you the story on how it all began. I was about 13 years old. We just moved into this house. And my mom and dad, obviously, were the ones that bought the house. And it was the first house that they'd ever actually owned. We'd rented for years before that. And right after, about a year after we moved in, there was no incidents at all the first year. But about a year after we moved in, my mother had her grandfather pass away. And he literally was her paternal figure. Her mom was kind of an absent mother, we'll say. She wasn't there all the time. So her grandmother and grandfather raised her. So when he died, this really spiraled her into a state of depression. And I think looking back now, that might have more to do with what was happening, almost like poltergeist activity, than a true haunting. So he passes away. She's really down and out. And one day we're sitting in the living room. It's nighttime. It's probably 7 o'clock. And I'm sitting on one end of the living room. She's sitting beside me on a couch. I'm on a chair, and we've got an end table between us. Across the room, we have one of these big 700-pound console TVs.
Had one.
And, yeah. And she's watching the 700 Club, which is a religious program, and they had a prayer line, and she was on the phone on that prayer line, okay? I'm sitting there drawing on my little sketch pad. She's on the prayer line. Now, on the television, not like playing on the airwaves, but sitting on top of the television, was this, we're going to say it was like a doll chair. It was literally about this big, that tall. But it was a pincushion, actually. So you could lift up the seat of the chair, and that's where you would put your thread and spools of thread and stuff. And then the rest of it was all padding and lace, and you could just stick your needles and stuff. But that's what it was. It was basically for needles and thread and stuff like that. Well, this thing was sitting on top of the television, and it had some house numbers on it where we just got through painting the house. So three metal house numbers and a bottle of Elmer's glue. So it was weighted down, to say the least. As she's on the phone with this prayer line, this thing literally pops up in the air about 2 feet and goes and drops in the middle of the floor, probably 5 feet away from the TV. So it didn't fall off the TV. It popped in the air and out and lands in the middle floor, and all the house numbers and Elmer's glue and stuff just scatters all over the floor. And we just looked at each other like, did you just see that? And we both knew we saw it. And she tells them on the phone, well, I need to get off of here. And she hangs up. Couple hours later, I go to bed. I'm in the back of the house. She comes in there and wakes me up shortly after I'd fallen asleep, saying she heard some noises up in our attic. Could I come into the living room and sit with her? You got to know, my mom wasn't one of these people that scare off easily. She grew up in haunted houses, and she'd seen ghosts, and she's just something she didn't get scared of. And so I go in there, I sit in the living room with her, and I don't hear anything. So 10, 15 minutes later, I go to bed. The next night, she wakes me up again. Same thing. She's hearing noises in the attic. I come in and sit in the living room, but as soon as I get in the living room, I hear noises up there. Now, our attic was just for storage. There was no place to walk around up there. If you could kind of bend over and get around up there, but it was not a lot of space. All we had up there were some boxes of Christmas ornaments and Christmas tree and stuff like that. So, and there was no plywood up there to walk on. It was just like the rafters, the 2x4 rafters. So what I heard moving sounded like a heavy wooden dresser scooting across a wooden floor. You know that sound that heavy wood makes when it's on wood. And that was nothing up there. There was nothing up there that could have made that noise. Nothing. And this went on for a little bit. And it got to where that was something we heard on a fairly regular basis. On top of that, we would hear a baby crying. We would hear voices in the ductwork in my room. You know, it would hear whispering. You could hear three distinct voices, two male, one female. But it was always more like a, I just want to know that. So you couldn't understand a word it said.
Yeah.
But you could make out the different voices. So I rendered that problem. by saving my money from babysitting and cutting grass for the next door neighbors to go buy a stereo from Kmart that I put right beside my bed. So all I had to do is just roll over and turn it on anytime there were noises. And that's the majority of the type of stuff that happened in a house. I mean, there were some other odds and end things. I had the way my house was set up, when you came in, there was my sister's room. A door led to my sister's room. And then there was a door in her room that led to my room. And then another door that led, you know, to another room. And this all made like a big circle. But each door, you could get into each room. That's the only way you could get in was through the other room. And my sister's door would usually stay open. So even though I had my own room, that door between us usually was open. So we didn't get a ton of privacy. But there was in her room was a little toy box. And it was right beside that door. Now, it was one summer to where everybody was out in the pool, which was right outside my bedroom window, so I could look out there and see everybody. And I was watching a baseball game, Atlanta Braves baseball game. And I decided to get up and go walk outside, just talk to the family. Well, as I go to walk through her room, there was some toys, some stuffed animals laying there in the middle of the floor. So I pick them up, put them in the toy box. I walk outside. I talk to the family. I come back in the house. Nobody else has been in the house. And those toys are right back in the floor. So I put the toys back. I shut that door. And I put a television in front of it. Because that console TV that was in the living room eventually became mine when they got something new. And I put that TV in there. And I put it right there across the door where nobody could go in and out that door. So if you went to come to my room, you had to come all the way around the long way and go through all the other rooms to get to my room.
Wow. But
that's the majority of type stuff. It just happened over and over and over again.
Wow.
For like 5 years, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep, consistently wow. Over 5 years.
The voices thing is weird because my old roommate that I used to live with, she would hear that stuff all the time. She would hear it in the pedestal fan. She would hear voices coming out of it.
That's odd.
She's like, "Do you hear that?" I'm like, "No." And she was the same way. She said, "It's three people, two men and a woman." And she would only hear it. She'd turn the fan off. They're gone. She turned the fan back on. There they are again. I'm like, "Well, I don't hear it." So that's just weird that you said about the voices like that.
And I've heard that a bunch of times through different people. It's a lot of times where you can hear the whispering, but you can't make out what you're saying.
That's strange. Wow. So, what possessed you to write your book, which I happen to have right here?
Ah, there it is.
He's got the old version. There's a new version now.
It's personalized and everything. I haven't actually read it, but I have listened to it because you read it on the podcast. And
this is true.
What a ride that was.
What caused me to write the book? We get asked all the time by people to write a book. And I didn't want to, you know, there's a lot of people out there, Jim Harold and Tony Bruschi and all them, they'll write books of all these stories that they've heard or stories that people have told them and they put into a book. And I didn't want to do that. That's been done to death. I mean, what am I going to write about the Bell Witch that's not already been written or wasn't written better? And so I just kind of put that out. And I did think about at one time maybe doing I wanted to go to every county in Kentucky because there's like a shit ton, like 103 counties or something. We got a bunch of counties. I wanted to literally go to every county and get a ghost story from each county. I thought that would be kind of be cool. That would be a little bit different. And it didn't have to be a famous one. It could just be, you know, if I came to your county and you had a story, I would just use yours for that county, you know? And that still might be something I do down the road, but it really wasn't something. I mean, I'm not an author. I don't see myself as an author by any way, shape, or form. So, you know, what the hell? Who wants to read what I got to say? But then, you know, we obviously started getting really big into mental health support and changing our group into a support group for people that were struggling And we started getting all these emails over the years of people saying, you know, that we helped them out. And some of them were really incredibly touching and kind of unbelievable for the most part that we would make that kind of a difference in somebody's life. And then I was just saying one day, you know what? I do have a story I can tell, but it's not in true book form. But I could tell a third of the book, the first part about growing up in a haunted house. And then the second part about how I deal with my depression and my failed suicide attempt back when I got divorced. And maybe that will help somebody. And then we can talk about how we combine those two things to actually use on Hillbilly Horror Stories, how we use a paranormal podcast to help people that's struggling. So I thought that would be kind of a different concept. And that was a story I could tell that nobody else had. And that was the main reason for writing the book. And then in the back of the book, I included, I don't know, 20 or 25 stories or emails that people had written us. And I got their permission, of course, to put in there to show, you know, okay, you read this book now. And I showed you the struggles I had with grief. I showed you the struggle, you know, when my mom passed away. I told you some good paranormal stories. I told you how I was a shitty person at one point. And in reality, that's the main reason for writing the book. I wanted to show people that I didn't feel like I was a good person at one point. I didn't feel like I was a good dad. I wasn't a good husband. I wasn't a good son. Now I think I've changed a lot of stuff in my life, and I felt like people could benefit by seeing that no matter what you think about yourself, you can change. And, you know, now I'm somebody who tries to help people all the time, as opposed to somebody would just take and do all kinds of bad shit when I was young. So that was the main reason for writing the book, was to show people that it's never too late to change. And I knew most people didn't know me like that. And I thought that was very risky. But I felt like it would be more beneficial to people to say, hey, a lot of you guys look up to me and see me as this giving person that helps people all the time. But I wanted you to see that it wasn't always like that. And hopefully that would give somebody hope to be able to say, all right, I can do that too if I want to. I can change.
Well, it took a lot of balls to do that, man, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah. I'm going to read this book. Because I'm a big book reader, so
I'll let you borrow my copy, Carl, since you're a reader.
Well, I'm a speed reader, too, so I can read.
Unless you want to listen to the podcast, listen to Hillbilly.
I'd rather read. I like reading.
Most people have told me that, and I've got 83 or 84 reviews on Amazon, and all of them are 5 stars except for one. And that was the very first review that I got because somebody didn't read the description. They thought it was going to be about Southern Gothic ghost tales, and it wasn't. And they gave me 1 star. And even though it says in the description, very detailed, it tells you exactly what it is. Almost like the description I gave, it's that detailed in the description. So I guess because they didn't read it. And anyways, but that's the only review we got that's not a 5-star on Amazon.
Well, we won't even count that. Yeah. Just somebody not paying attention to stuff.
Anyway, you can delete that fucker.
No.
But most people, I did reach out and say something. I left a response on there, and Leslie Fear, of course, is an author, a longtime author. She's like, oh, you can't be doing that. I'm like, I'm not an author. I can do that. I don't care. But what I was going to say is most people who've read it told me they got through it in about a day and a half. So it's a pretty quick read from my understanding.
Well, yes. I'm definitely going to have to read it because it sounds interesting to me.
Well, you'll pick up on something because Brett's got the original copy, and there was a typo in there. It's not a typo like I just screwed up and put the wrong date, but I fixed it in all the copies that go out to now. But it's my oldest son was born March 4th, and I went through and did the same thing. When I posted my other son, he was actually born on April 8th. And that's the day that they found Kurt Cobain's body. And the exact day. I mean, that I heard about it on the radio coming back from the hospital. So he was born the day that they found Kurt Cobain's body. But in the book, I put the day that they found Kurt Cobain's body, but I put March 4th again as the date. So anybody who knows their Kurt Cobain death history would look at that immediately.
They're going to catch it.
He wasn't found March 4th, but there wouldn't. I mean, there was a decent amount of those books that went out because there was a lot of people that got the pre-ordered. So there's probably about 40 of them that went out like that. But then I've got all the other ones fixed after that.
Awesome. Yeah,
so Brett, you got a special edition.
I'm special.
There. Yeah.
You know, Carl, send me when we get through, send me your address and I'll actually write. I just got a new shipment in and I'll send you your own copy and I'll personalize it for you.
Oh, well, I'd appreciate that. Definitely.
See, ain't he a hell of a good guy, man?
He is, yeah. Definitely is.
Oh. Well, all right, Jerry. I think we've taken up enough of your time, brother.
Yeah, really I'm appreciate old, man. You. It's 10 o'clock here. That's past my bedtime.
That's past the bedtime.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, man. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
My phone number is 502. I'm just kidding. it's not like I haven't given that out over the air though to thousands of people. So
yeah.
Anyway, it's the show's Hillbilly Horror Stories. I don't even know if we mentioned that or not. I don't know if we did or not. You might have. But it's Hillbilly Horror Stories. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us. So it doesn't matter what platform, Spotify, iHeart, Apple Podcast, obviously Stitcher, Google. If you get your podcast on there, if you're listening to this, you can find us there.
And hillbillyhorrorstories.com, is that right?
Yeah, that's still up, and you can listen to the show there, and you can find out where all of our live events are and get tickets there, so you can learn a little bit about the ones that are up right now. We've got 3 up. After tomorrow, we'll have 4 up, and then we'll get the other ones done as quick as I can get them set up. I like to get them out this time of year so people have plenty of time to get them, and a lot of people buy them as Christmas gifts. So
awesome. You got the food line, get that going.
I took that off the website though.
What's that?
I took that off the website. I'm trying not to sell the food stuff online anymore. It's too expensive to ship and I felt guilty.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. So, I can see that.
I could sell these things for $10 all day long at a convention or a live event. But if I ship it, it costs me $17-$18. And then I don't even make as much off of that as you would think, because the shipping, if for a bottle of barbecue sauce to ship, it costs like $10 to $12 just to ship it.
Wow.
So then we're not making any money. And I'm like, I feel bad charging somebody $17-$18. And then we're not making any money off of it, which that's not the be all, you know, end all. But I don't want to feel like I'm taking advantage of somebody and us not make money off of it. It's like, you know, it's just, so I took the food product off the page. It's not that I don't want to sell it, but I don't want anybody to ever think we're taking advantage of them.
Awesome. And the book is on Amazon. Is it anywhere else? Or
you can get it on the website. It's $20 on the website. That includes shipping, but it also gets you personalized and a free bookmark.
Okay, cool. And that is Hillbilly Horror Stories, Demons, Depression, and Redemption. Go buy one.
Definitely.
All right, man. We appreciate you coming on for our 100th episode.
Congrats, man. That is not an easy feat. So to get to 100 episodes, most podcasts will never do that.
We just do it for fun, man.
Well, let's give the props to Brett because he does 99% of the work. I just show up and talk. So that's why I don't claim to be the co-host. I'm just more of a contributor.
That's a running joke.
Hey. I did do my Dracula reviews and I was getting some feedback on that. So I was kind of proud of that.
Yeah. Then we had some guy over in Britain saying how we pronounced all kinds of stuff wrong on the, what episode was that?
Brides of Dracula.
Yeah. The Brides of Dracula. But yeah.
We are in Texas. So you got to give us a little bit of credit there.
Exactly. Well, they do pronounce stuff way different over there. I mean, it's just not just the accent thing, but you know, there's a lot of words that they just pronounce different over period. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like over here, we might say Gloucestershire or Gloucestershire. They'll say Gloucester. And I'm like, well, that don't even, that's not the way it's spelled, but you know.
Exactly.
I think it was Bronze Studios that we got in trouble for, and that thing's been out of business since the 70s or 60s. But yeah,
was I pronouncing it Bray?
I think so.
Yeah, something like
that. I call it Braun, and I think he had something totally different.
Maybe I said it right and you said it wrong. I don't know.
I don't know. It's been gone since the 60s. It don't exist. It got bulldozed.
All right, Jerry. Well, thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. Thank you, guys. Good luck in the future. Another 100 episodes.
And everybody stay evil.